News of Europe, Saturday, August 24th, and Columbia brings you the latest developments direct from the belligerent European capitals and a summary of the latest news by Albert Warner from Washington. This morning, although it is high noon over there, William L. Shira reports from Berlin, and Eric Sefarad will give the latest developments from the capital of Great Britain and a telephone report from Edward R. Murrow. Now the news direct from the German capital. Go ahead, Berlin.
This is Berlin.
These days remind me very much of last winter. It's cold and dreary, and the war seems to be at a standstill. It may well be that it's the calm before the storm. If it is, we shall soon see. In the meantime, the German papers, having no new victories to report, warm up the old ones. Journals like the BZ, a noon paper, tell us today again of the terrible effectiveness of the German bombings in Britain. According to this paper, the residents of the English towns on the south coast are leaving their homes and going north to escape the bombings. They cannot stand the strain, we are told here, of the continuous German attacks and the hardships of spending day and night in the air raid cellars. That's the picture the German papers give their leaders. They also report that 10,000 people are leaving Dover for safer parts as a result of the Stuka bombings. No mention is made that the German long-range guns might have something to do with the desire of a resident of Dover to move. In fact, the London reports of the cross-channel bombardments by the big guns on both sides have not yet been publicly confirmed here. The papers make no mention of them. As further proof of the effectiveness of Germany's air attack on Britain, the papers in Berlin this morning published photographs of some of the bombed airfields. I'm afraid I'm an amateur at reading aerial photographs, and I don't see in them what the experts see. However, I find these pictures interesting. One on the front page of the Turkish Beobachter shows the airfield at Maidstone in England. From one corner of the field, you can see smoke issuing from some buildings. A German caption explains it is a result of direct hits. Another photograph shows a railway gun position near St. Margaret's, which has been bombed. A third shows smoke issuing from some buildings on the edge of an airfield, which the German caption says is southeast of London. Croydon is southeast of London. The caption explains that a Stuka bombing has just taken place. Two buildings are on fire. Incidentally, this unusual August weather we've been having over here for the last 3 weeks not only hampers air activity, it affects the crops. No figures are available yet on the damage, but there seems little doubt that not only the grain, so badly needed in Europe this winter, but also other crops, like potatoes, in some parts are going to be adversely affected by the cold, damp weather. The German papers today pay some attention to Albania. They quote an Albanian journal, Tomori, to the effect that another one of these Albanian patriots has been murdered. Now it develops that the murder took place last May, and it is not specifically stated that the Greeks did it. However, the Greeks are taken to task for practically closing the border between Albania and Greece. This is said to cause hardship to Albanians. Question about the state of relations between Italy and Greece today. The Wilhelm Strauss advised that the situation was not critical. No ultimatums have been sent, they pointed out. German women, as you know, are not permitted to have anything to do with Polish prisoners. Today I notice in the papers that two German women have been sentenced to 3 years in the penitentiary because they did. And here's an item from the official journal of German lawn tennis. It jibes at Germans who still use English expressions when playing the racket game. Germans should no longer say, for example, that the score is 15-30. They should use a German word for figure. Nor should they say deuce or game or set point. So the journal gives a German equivalent for about 30 English tennis terms. For lob, they say Hochball, literally a high ball. For smash, Schmetterball. Rückhand for backhand, and so on. For a little time, I suppose some people will get a little mixed up in their tennis. This is William L. Shira in Berlin, returning you now to CBS in New York.
This is New York, and before taking you to London, here is a dispatch from Bucharest. Numerous Romanian army units have been shifted from the Bulgarian frontier to the Hungarian frontier. It was understood today, as diplomatic quarters forecast, that Romanian-Hungarian territorial negotiations would end tonight or tomorrow in deadlock. Some troops have been sent to the eastern frontier opposite Russian seized territories. Reports that there had been a new mobilization order were denied. Officials said in explanation that every officer and soldier who could be spared from civilian duties had been under arms for months. Now to the British capital for the news reported by Eric Severide. Go ahead, London.
This is London. Edward Murrow just phoned me from Dover about 15 minutes ago to say that German coastal batteries have again this morning shelled the Dover area. He reports at least 7 shells landing. The damage he has seen personally so far is one house half blown away. Germans bombed one small ship just off the coastal cliffs. Without success, he reported. There were long, drawn-out dogfights overhead, but nobody at Dover could follow the battle because the planes were at such a great height. One plane did go down in the sea, and at least one more back inland. It's just reported here in London that British guns have retaliated this morning and shelled the coast of France once more. Last night, the RAF bombed around Boulogne and that coastal area. The Air Ministry reports officially at least 3 raiders shot down so far today. Since a strong force of German bombers and fighters came over, the casualty figures will certainly mount as the day wears on. This morning, there was an alarm in London at 8:20, just when the city was going to work. It was our first daylight alarm since Sunday. I climbed up on my roof, which is in the center of London, and saw nothing but barrage balloons with the sun shining on them. I heard nothing but an occasional taxi in the street and a forgotten alarm clock going off in a bedroom down below. No anti-aircraft firing and no sound of planes or bombs. Later this morning, they told us the planes did no bombing at all in the London area. Some bombs did drop in East Anglia. There's no confirmation of last night's reports that parachutes have been found in the Midlands, but no details. The London press today maintains that the German Air Force has definitely altered its tactics in the last week, going from mass raids on military objectives to scattered raids on anything at all. I suppose it's a serious allegation to make to say that the Germans are bombing and machine gunning indiscriminately, but after several days of traveling around southern and eastern England, I'm convinced it's true. Another American correspondent I've talked to feel the same way. There was some point, some military point, in terrorizing Belgian and French civilians, but why they try it here, I can't imagine. There are no refugees packing the roads to panic. The war in southeastern Europe seemed a bit closer this morning. According to London reports, Romania has canceled army leave and ordered air raid shelters to be ready for civilians by September 15. Conversations between Hungary and Romania are said to be almost broken down. Greece has canceled all steamer services in her island, and 500,000 Italian troops are reported on the Greek-Albanian border. London diplomatic observers this morning believe that Mussolini's method of handling this Greece affair may reveal Hitler's intentions in his fight with Britain. They maintain that Hitler's efforts in the Balkans have been directed toward peace as a condition for German-directed economic organization. If he permits Mussolini to force open warfare, which may involve Turkey and Russia as well, then it would appear he has given up hope of smashing Britain in these islands and is obliged to strike at her in the east. Paradoxically, this morning it's announced that war risk insurance rates for voyages through the Mediterranean have gone down instead of up. The rate for the eastern Mediterranean, including Greece and Turkey, is down 5%. For Alexandria, Port Said, and Suez, it's down 8%. Following General de Gaulle's announcement that the Vichy government is making Germany a gift of 800 airplanes from French Africa, it's now reported in London that Italians are about to get the remnants of the French Navy at Toulon. Most of these are small vessels. The only capital ship is a battle cruiser Strasbourg, damaged at Oran by the British. Mussolini may get some French warships, but he just lost the British Order of the Bath. It was granted him in 1923 by George V. George VI took it away last night. And King Victor Emmanuel, Senior Knight of the Order of the Garter, has just lost that title, too. This is London. We return you to CBS New York.
And now back in America, and before taking you to Washington, here's a dispatch from Rome. Italian planes in a night bombing raid on the airport of Khartoum, capital of the Anglo-Egyptian Sudan, caused great destruction of hangars and a great fire, a high command communique reported today. Now the news from our own national capital, reported by Albert Warner. We take you to Washington.
Behind the president's plea yesterday for no delay on the conscription bill, and behind the War Department's program, which builds toward a peak in manpower and a considerable store of equipment by next spring, may lie a certain report on Hitler's timetable. The reported schedule calls for a threat to the United States by next April. Now, of course, there have been misrepresentations of the Hitler timetable. Any attack on the United States presupposes the prior defeat of Great Britain and the capture of a good part of the British fleet, That's a rather big order. There are also experts who will minimize the power of any attempted attack across the Atlantic in the near future, even if Britain should be conquered. There remains the further question as to whether Hitler would have either the desire or incentive to risk such a venture. But the fact remains that in certain quarters of the War Department, the report on Hitler's timetable persists and is credited with being an accurate reflection of the plannings of the German Chancellor. This report is used to bolster the plea of the American Army Command for strength by spring. This is Saturday, but it's no weekend holiday for the Senate. It meets to continue the debate on conscription. On top of the Saturday meeting, there will be night sessions every day next week until a vote is taken. A new instrument of defense begins functioning today. The American members of the Joint American-Canadian Defense Board, including Mayor LaGuardia of New York, will meet here this morning. Here is one half of a unique planning board, a board which relates Canada to the rest of the Western Hemisphere and provides the United States with new opportunities for its own defense. Air and naval bases, new highways, and the disposition of naval and land forces in an emergency may be discussed. But most of all, bases for the United States on British Islands and in Newfoundland. There are many in Congress who are not sure how effectively American defense preparation is proceeding. Thus comes the resolution of Senator Walsh asking a secret session of the Senate and a confidential report from Secretary of War Stimson. Senator Byrd also supports the general idea of an investigation. The Navy Department tells him, he says, that since the beginning of May, only 236 combat planes have been contracted for. Byrd said the Army combat planes put under contract since May numbered only 33 a few days ago, as Stimson testified. A War Department spokesman tells us the figure now is actually over 500. But Byrd says the program is going too slowly. He adds, whether it is the fault of industry or existing tax legislation or of the administrators in Washington, I don't know, but I intend to find out. There may be word from the White House today as to the future plans of Harry Hopkins, Secretary of Commerce and intimate friend of the President. The rumors I mentioned 2 weeks ago that he would resign have now reached a height which is requiring White House attention. It's a depressing sight in the Senate reception room. They will be there again today, some 30 matrons in heavy mourning seated around the room. They call it a demonstration of what passage of the conscription bill would mean to the mothers of America. Senators are conspicuous by the way they avoid the reception room, perhaps because the women hang Senator Pepper in effigy on the Capitol lawn. The women claim he represents forces steering us into the war. Mrs. Rose Farber of Detroit, vice president of the group, is a trifle vague as to just what these forces are. Of one thing, she said she was sure that Bernard Baruch is number one bad man in the United States. The group is also opposed to Roosevelt and critical of Wilkie. The group's been here before. It opposed lifting the arms embargo. There was excitement yesterday. Two members of the Green Guards, an organization of militant-minded Washington ladies, were there. But there was no fight. We return you now to New York.
And with this news from Washington, Columbia concludes this regular report of national and international developments. William L. Shire reported from Berlin, Eric Severide from London, and Albert Warner from Washington. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.